Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, folks. I'm Jack Kennedy, and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Heavy rain across most of the country is making for floods and difficult working conditions in many parts. Once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty, and Aidan Brennan to talk all things farming as normal. To start, a quick fire questions for Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, to start with you on the quick fire job, one quick fire here in for you. Ask Adam, I was considering selling off a few fat cull cows. Now, does it look like the compensation deal is gone for the moment?
Yeah, Jack. So the minister was in Tobin Park, obviously at the AFA climate conference on this week, and he basically took it off the table. So yeah, it's gone. The minister said he had listened to MII, he had listened to farm organisations, and both of those lobbied quite hard not to have any payment, incentive payment to reduce suckler cows. So it's back to the drawing board, I suppose. Look, at Jack, it's going to happen anyway. I think it's a political decision from the minister's point of view in terms of not going for a cull on the suckler herd. We talked about all the other pressures, and it's going to happen anyway. So I'll not say it's a cop out, but it's a smart move from the minister.
Okay, Darren, one quick fire for you. Back to you in a minute, Adam. One quick fire for you, Darren. Is it true that the eco-scheme part of the land lease stays with the active farmer rather than the landowner?
It's not true, but it's not right either in the say. I should start and say, Jack, that it stays with neither, that it's just on the land now. So it's totally separated from the entitlement. So going forward, your eco scheme elements of the, say, what you contributed to, and also your CRSP payment, that is taken totally away from the entitlement, stays with the land. So if I'm a farmer farming 30 hectares, I have no entitlements, I get 30 eco scheme payments, and I get full payment on the CRSP. I hope that explains it.
Thanks, Darren. Aidan, one quick fire for you. Let me read it out here till I get it right. Is it correct to say that all cows will be classified as having 106 kilos of organic nitrogen unless I submit my milk figures to the Department of Agriculture? Aidan, talk to me.
Yes, Jack. That's the standing at the moment, you know, and the statutory instrument that the department signed off on, or the government signed off on before Christmas, states that. And farmers have until the 14th of February to inform the department of what their milk yield is. So that's all, you know, they can fill in a form and or submit the records, let's say, for milk. And then I presume then at that point, it'll go back to, you know, whatever the correct band is then. So whether it's 92 or 80 from the start of the year, if that makes sense, you know.
Thanks, Aidan. Back to you in a minute. Adam, coming back to you. Did you not go to Thomond Park because you knew the Munster team would be training there and you didn't want to upset yourself?
I was going to text you, Jack, to get some autographs or some selfies, but I didn't. I thought better of it. Maybe you wouldn't be down in the pitch with them.
Yeah, no, there was entertainment in all sides. Like, so we were listening to Charlie and at the same time looking at Gavin Coombs pulling it out of the air. Like, so there was a bit of sport. Like, but yeah, you weren't allowed to take photographs at him anyway, so I couldn't have got them for you, like, you know, but it was illegal to do so, or so we were warned. There was a couple of sneaky ones taken, but anyway, Adam, like, it's the big news, I'll say, in terms of your guys this week. The minister was in Thomond Park and he took the Suckler compensation scheme off the table. He had included it in his climate action plan just prior to Christmas, like the 22nd or 23rd Christmas Eve, they released the climate action plan. He had left it in as an option, but he hadn't put any numbers on it or costed on it. And effectively, people, I suppose, the Suckler farmers were waiting to hear a bit more. But that seems it's fairly categorically now, Adam, it's dead in the water. There's not going to be a compensation scheme.
Yeah, I think so, Jack. Look at those huge debate out there in the sector around what money was going to be there, what incentive payment was going to be there. There was an income for gone figure there of 1,200, and there was a bit of confusion then. Was that an incentive payment? Was it not? But basically, it's gone now. The minister has said it this week. And look, as we said, it's gonna probably happen anyway around that we'll say reduction of Suckler cows. There's just going to be no incentive payment in there. Interestingly, I sent out an email last week to readers and got it back some sort of survey results on three very basic questions. But the first question was, if there was a scheme, would you apply to opt in for reduction or exit? 50% of farmers came back and said that they would opt into that, and 50% said they wouldn't. And interesting, the second question was that, I suppose it's dead in the water now, but it's if you were thinking about selling in 2023, 94% of farmers said they'd wait to see what that scheme was going to look like. So it just shows you, in terms of everybody was holding off, basically, on their plans for 2023, depending on what was going to come out of that exit and reduction fund. But as of now, there's no fund there for that.
Correct, it looks like it. And the dairy scheme is potentially still on the table, in terms of, he said in Thomond Park that, listen, he'd go back to the Food Vision Dairy Group, and because there was some support for a reduction scheme in the dairy herd. So he was going to go back to the Food Vision Dairy Group and do a few numbers, or get them to do a few more numbers on that side of things. So maybe there'll be a few dairy cows taken off the table instead of Sucklers. I mean, you've a piece, Adam, there, I see in the paper, in terms of, and I think the headline is that the national Suckler herd is already hitting the reduced targets on emissions.
Yeah, so we had a look. I suppose there's an awful lot of talk around earlier slaughter age, Jack. And in terms of looking at the reduction of Suckler cow numbers, we say since 2018, we're tracking back about 3.5% every year. So if that continues to 2030, we'll be left with about 650,000 cows, a reduction of 300,000 cows. So if I put 3.4, we'll say, a ton of CO2 equivalents on each cow, we'll say, during that time, I can reduce, we'll say, emissions by upwards of sort of 30% by 2030, on the very basic facts of less Suckler cows being in the Suckler herd. Now, look, I suppose I should have said at the very outset, nobody is looking at this within a Suckler herd or within a dairy herd. We're looking at this as Ireland Inc. in terms of emissions. But I wanted to look this week as regards the Suckler sector and the beef sector, what it's doing. The problem is, I suppose, those 300,000 cows are going, but on the other side, the dairy herd is growing, and FAPRI would forecast that the dairy herd will grow by another 300,000 over the next 8 years. So that cancels out that 300,000. The other piece I looked at was slaughter age, and this is going to be generate a lot of discussion now in the coming weeks and around earlier slaughter age. We talked about this a couple of months ago on this show, Jack, about 24, 25 months being the new target. Yeah. On that climate action plan that you just talked about, they slipped in 22, 23 months in the second carbon budget from 25 to 30. And that's a massive shift from 24, 25 to 22, 23. So I looked at this week in terms of what that could do to a national kill profile. It's on the beef page this week, looking at, I suppose, if we have a million, we reckon with sex semen, there'll be a million dairy beef animals coming from the dairy herd to be finished. And if we profile them that we want to kill them at 22, 23 months, we've about an 8 month, 9 month window to slaughter those animals. And that'll really condense things around January, December and February. And it could lead to a kill heading for 60,000 for those weeks in the year. And that would be a nightmare scenario for winter finishers as regards getting a premium for beef during that time.
And what would that? What would the impact be, Adam? Like, I mean, is it just putting more power back into the hands of the factories? Is that what you're thinking?
Absolutely. Look, I suppose beef isn't milk, Jack. You can dry milk, maybe you can sell it in a couple of months' time. You can't do that with beef. You freeze it, that devalues it. Look, they'll still sell it, but they'll sell it at a lower price. So it really will say puts the power back into the factories in terms of during those months of the year. Ironically, it could be actually in that scenario of pushing for 22 months. Well, bulls is the first thing that's going to have to be talked about again, because if we could slaughter 16-month bulls out of the suckler herd, that could really, we'll say, front load our earlier slaughter, and maybe we could finish more animals off grass maybe at a later stage. But it's going to pull you back from the natural time over the last maybe 10 years has been that we've dipped in August, September, where a lot of grass cattle come off grass. If we push that slaughter date back to 22, 23 months, we could actually see lower numbers during that sort of grass time. And the last point I'll make is interesting to note that in this week's paper, the minister has said he's not ruling out an earlier slaughter premium. All options are being considered as to how they would implement widespread adoption of that technology of earlier slaughter. So watch that space, I'd say, in terms of the coming months, what's going to happen.
Are you suggesting that he's holding his pot of money instead of giving the compensation, that he'll give it that way, like, Adam? Yeah,
it could be, and it could be a combination of factories, maybe, Jack, and government as regards pushing people towards that earlier slaughter age. I think it's going to need something like that to move it.
Hey, come here. I see you're talking up the price of weanlings again. Who in the name of God is selling weanlings at this time of the year? Or what way does that work like?
Yeah. Supply and demand, Jack. Supply and demand. If we've low supply, we're in high demand, you know what happens to the price. But yeah, look, really good. I suppose we had that 3,500 to leave for Turkey before Christmas. And another order has come back in. Those weanlings come off the ship in I think, where was it? Oh, I can't remember the port in Turkey. Yeah. Really, really happy. Customers really, really happy. Loads of different customers got those weanlings. They've been back, want more weanlings. So we have three exporters now in the market for weanlings. We have another order came in for Libya, Viastar, the Malin family's exporting company, are in the market this week for Frisian bulls, 300 to 500. That's going roll on, roll off to Spain, and then they're going on a boat from Spain over to Libya. So it's really, really happening in this space in terms of, then you've got beef finish, you know, beef prices kicking on. You've got factory agents back around the ring, we'll say, trying to get factory cattle. You've got people killing cattle that are quite strong back around the ring again. So the mart business has really started off 2023 with a bang, and we've seen lots of different rows and marts this week in terms of hands waving, trying to stop lads buying stock and trying to get in before other lads. So it's really, really hectic there this week.
My buddy was telling me 5-10 on the grid for his white-head heifers, like, you know, And yet I heard you rumbling about get a flat price of 550. Who's right there? Who's telling lies?
Yeah, you may go back to him. He's a weak seller, that lad, Jack. 510, he needs more. 520, I'd say, a base for heifers. And I've had people kill, we'll say, Herefords and Angus's this week at 550 flat. And possibly even more, I'd say, I'll go next week. You've got the China thing as well. Look, a lot has happened in the last 7 days, but China has reopened again. And looking at that, in the last time we were looking at a 10 cent bonus on top of the base price, so that's going to drive, we'll say, competition. Now look at China's four quarter cuts, it's knuckles, it's sort of awful of that, but it's still going to help that demand. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I would, just on the China piece, like, I mean, we should mention it in fairness, because it's a huge positive in fairness for the trade, you know, but is it excuse me, is it one of those, Adam, that it's a little bit further down the line? Like, I mean, we talked about the US opening before and Japan opening, like, and really, is it maybe 2 years time before the China thing kicks in? Like, you know, does it take a while to kind of get the market and the routes established into China?
It will, but I'd say a lot of those markets and routes were already established, Jack, in 2020. We were in their full flying, we'll say 2019, we'd done 100 million. And I'd say those channels would be opened up very, very quickly again. And I know, speaking to some factories, they're planning on killing within the next 2 weeks for China again. So that's going to happen all quite fast. There's no word on bonuses yet, but it has to be a minimum of 10 cents. The last time we were doing beef into China, beef was at 3.50 a kilo. It's north of 5 euros now. So you would imagine that bonus maybe needs to be more. Not a lot of requirements there. You're talking 12 months without TB, never have BSE, segregation on the way to the factory and segregation in the factory. So it's not big onerous stuff there on factories, you know, to kill for China.
Do I detect a kind of a mid-January a sentiment positivity, Adam, that maybe hasn't been there in the past? Like,
looking out the window here, Jack, and it's pelting rain. We didn't talk about the weather, but
need something to lift you, like, yeah.
No, it's all, no, in fairness, look at it. I think the first 6 months of this year is going to be good. We're going to capitalize on it, and hopefully it'll stay there, yeah.
Yeah. You have a nice feature there on a Roscommon pedigree job.
Yeah, Shannon was out with the Gibbons family. Look, the Gibbons family have came strong on the scene in 20. They've been there a couple of years, but really 2022 was their year, and Shannon sort of went back across the year. They got the highest price for an Angus heifer in Carrick there at Christmas. They won the All-Ireland in Oldcastle in August. And look, a family farm, Roscommon farm, typical West of Ireland farm, are just going through all the work they put into breeding. It's a really nice read. There's two pages on pedigree this week.
There's another real nice read there as well. It's the Horsemead, looking back at the Horsemead saga like 10 years ago. Like, I mean, I'd say, you know, and I can just remember it. Like, I mean, the heebie-jeebies that went around the trade at that time, like, you know what I mean, when that started to come out. Like, I mean, it was some serious phone calls. Like,
yeah, I seen some of the pictures, and it had sent shivers down your spine, Jack, to be. But I suppose, look, you have to look at some of the positives and what the, you know, the structures that have been put in place since that, in terms of not allowing that happen again. And I think it really bulletproof things. And in terms of even finding, we didn't talk about much at the time, but in terms of finding that was a huge, we'll say, you know, positive of the whole food security system, that we actually identified it. And look, at you'd never want to go back there again, hopefully.
Thanks, Adam. Darren, looking at you, I see you have a piece there on Tullamore Farm, and you were scanning and you got better results than the last couple of years.
Yeah, sure. We said last week, Jack, that we'd come back and look into it a bit better. And it's funny, like this, say, we're a lot happier than other years, in that our mature, the scanning rate of mature yaws is 1.91. lambs per mature yaw put to the ram, 4.5% barren rate. Now, that's, I suppose, look at under 5 isn't too bad. You'd like it at 3% if you could, but given that we had 7% and 12.5%, we're not going to complain on that.
So there's still room for improvement for Sean and the management team down there. Like, yeah.
Well, we won't maybe just be saying that to Sean just yet, but when it comes to breeding next year, we'd say it. But the one thing, I suppose, having the scanning rate improved on the back of a poor one last year, we probably haven't been able to see what impact the drought has had. Because if we look at the scanning on the Hoggett yaws, which was unaffected last year, it was more the older yaws that the scanning issues were in the recent years. And I should say, we have no reason why. But the scanning rate in the Hoggett yaws will be back about 0.08. Our litter size in our yaw lambs will be back by a similar figure. And I would say definitely that's probably because them yaw hoggets, the reared lambs, had a more challenging period. And it probably affected them more than mature yaws, they were still growing, that type of thing. Yeah. And like, if I look at the national picture and talk to farmers, Wexford, Carlow, right up across into Offaly, that did say suffer from the prolonged drought, like the litter size is back anywhere from 0.15 to 0.2. Generally, barren rates aren't really up, but like, that's a significant hit in litter size. Now,
yeah,
I talked to a farmer
Sound, Darren, the 0.15 or the 0.2, it doesn't sound massive, you know, the kind of a way, but I suppose when you put it over the total flock, it's a bundle of lambs, like.
That's exactly. And say, where that's really having an impact is that if you were scanning sort of 1.7, 1.8, you're now back at 1.5, which seems very challenging. I was talking to one farmer this week who would normally be at sort of around 2.15, very prolific flock. Yeah. He's back at 1.92. And he said in the current climate, he doesn't mind that because he's far fewer triplets. Milk powder, the cost is well up. Yeah. The cost of concentrates is well up. Yeah. And myself and Sean had that discussion too. Now, we have 40 triplets out of the 170 mature yaws, and we have 40 yaws carrying singles, or there or thereabouts, 40 or 41. So Sean will be hoping for a good bit of cross fostering. In a normal year, you'd like less singles, you'd like your twins to be up at 60%. Ours is at about 47%. But given where things are at, it's something we'd accept for this year coming, Jack, and see, as you say, there's a little bit of improvement for next year.
make it work. Like, I'm sure Sean is listening to this. Like, he'll be dead happy that we're kind of giving him a little bit more capacity there for improvement. Darren, the other piece, like, that I suppose that you have this week in terms of the TB rules and what's changing there. And you've a piece there back in the business of farming in terms of the rules around selling. You know, with the new TB rules, and you had a chat with Ray Doyle, had you, the ICOS man?
Yeah, so Ray actually came in. I met Ray because it was something we were getting a lot of calls from farmers and a lot of calls from MARC managers as well. We covered this in November, and I suppose when the TB letters came out, there was a lot of talk around in this. Essentially, the rules are this: if your animal's at within 6 month tests, now this applies to cows, so, and males over 36 months. So if I'm selling farm to farmer through a mart, they haven't been tested in the last 6 months, I either test them 30 days prior to movement, or the farm that they move on, test them for within 30 days, or else their herd is restricted. Now, a lot of farmers were after opinion then that if they didn't test 30 days pre-movement, that it would have a serious knock-on effect on the value of them cull cows, that there'd be far fewer men to buy them. Now, Ray has worked through figures on that, and he said that in general, or typically, about 80 to 85% of the cull cows passing through a mart are purchased by buyers that are categorized as controlled finishing units. So that could be a factory feedlot, it could be a factory themselves, or it could be a farm that specializes in finishing cows that is farming under, say, this TB status. And under those circumstances, those farms already sort of abide by more stringent TB regulations, whereas all the animals are going straight for slaughter. So these new rules don't affect those. So in essence, those 80% of cows, if a farmer was worried about somebody buying them and say or staying away from them because they'd have to be tested again, that doesn't apply to the majority of cows that are traded. Okay. Yes, it will apply to, say, maybe some suckler cows or some dairy cows that are being sold, but I think that's a decision that, say, farmers selling those breeding animals will be able to weigh up. But for the vast majority, the cull cow thing, there isn't any change, or there's no mandatory requirement to test them 30 days pre-movement.
Okay. No, there's a nice piece on that there, if anyone's looking for a bit more detail on it. The other one that you have detail on, Darren, and in fairness, it's intricate enough when you get into reading it, is that whole piece around the leasing and trading of entitlements or land leasing and the changes that are coming down the cap reform piece and the trading of entitlements, etc. I mean, Darren, this in effect is came into effect the 1st of January 2023. This is the new cap and what it means in terms of the impact it's going to have and the changes that are happening to entitlement values and the knock-on effect, I suppose, then on those that have had land leases and those that are trading entitlements or leasing entitlements. You have a couple of case studies where you go through a couple of real examples.
Yeah, and as you say, Jack, it's quite intricate. I apologize to any readers. I was even talking to a few from the office who read the paper over the last day or two, and they were saying, you know, they had to read it a second time. And look, it's something that we looked at, and it is hard to get your head around it because there's so many permutations. But essentially, it goes back to that question, or that quick fire question that we were asking, is this: if you're leasing land of me, and there seems to be two main sort of ones coming up. So if it's a straight land lease, if a straight lease of entitlements, if I'm leasing 20 entitlements off you, Jack, if I have been giving you 60 to 70% of the value of those back in recent years, keeping 30 to 40% myself, there will be a change this year in this. Because the Eco Scheme and Chris are, say, based on the land, they will no longer, or should no longer, be transferred back to you. So now your value will be 60 to 70% off the BIS. So, and what will also come into play there is if that is subject to convergence. So you now have three different elements affecting that. And that's probably your more standard or straightforward situation, Jack. Where it gets trickier is that if I had leased those entitlements off you for 5 years, if those, say, 20 entitlements were worth 300 euros each, and I said, or I wrote down on the lease, or sorry, we agreed on the lease that I gave you 6,000 back, that was it. I gave you the full price of that back, or even whether it be 5,000, whatever figure it was.
Yeah.
It now becomes much more trickier because the eco scheme payment is in that. If it's only entitlements that has been traded, well, then there's no land to draw down that on. If I already have over the 30 hectares of, say, my own land, I won't be able to get to Chris. So now if I have written down contractually a figure, I might end up subsidizing that figure to give that back to you.
You might have to pay it. As you say, you've written it down, you've signed up to it. You're going to someone's going to have to bridge the gap.
Yes, and like we spoke, we got legal advice. Look, we spoke to our own solicitor that we pushed some of the Farmers Journal queries in, and he said, look, contractually you're obliged to pay that back. He said, unless there's some way of working or there's something else somewhere in the lease that states or provides some flexibility, he said, that's a contractual obligation. Now, the third one, and which is a tricky one then, is just say with them 20 hectares of land, if you're leasing, or them 20 entitlements, if you're leasing the 20 hectares of land to me, the feedback I'm getting from some of the, say, merchants or the agents or brokers who are handling these entitlements is that then the conversation starts on, well, are you entitled to some of the eco scheme because you're given land with it or not? And look, that's a whole other minefield then again. To me, I think that the person farming should be getting the eco scheme. But that has been clouded a small bit in the fact that 93% of farmers are going to get the eco scheme without an expense via Space for Nature. And some farmers are now saying, hey, come here, that was grand if you had a cost to that. But if you have no cost, I think that that should also be included, or we should do some deal. And what's really, really, I suppose, maybe complicating that, Jack, is in Tipperary, Cork, Wexford, Waterford, all the dairy strongholds, there is such demand for land that landowners are willing to start talking about giving back some of that now, because nitrates is putting so much pressure on land, as I'm sure Aidan will follow up on this year. I think he was at the Positive Farmers Conference this week, and there's a lot of talk on that. So there's a number of different permutations that's adding in and complicating this and making it very, very hard to break down and to see what exactly is happening.
And Darren, I mean, you get plenty of queries on this, and you're looking for people to give you in more queries, you know. I mean, so if they have something, they can scribble it down.
Oh, if someone can scribble it down, send it to the Farm Tech Talk at farmersjournal.ie. Say email Jack. It might not be the exact query, because if we get five similar queries, we will cover that query, but it'll be their case study, because like the two case studies we have in this say week are very real case studies. They're two different ones, and we'll say cover different ones and those in the weeks ahead. And to me, that's how people will understand, or that's how we'll understand, because looking at it on paper is different to actually dealing with the very specific circumstances that are cropping up.
Yeah, no, it's fair to say. And we're obviously back on the Cap Roadshow coming up again. Now, you won't feel that coming, Darren. That's the first one is in Ballina. That's this coming Tuesday, is it?
Yeah, this coming Tuesday, Great Northern, 7:30, I think it is, Jack. And that's something that has come up a good bit, is the entitlements. And Fran Moran has also been very clear sort of on that, is that the department, some people have said, oh, that the department should have stated what happens with the eco scheme. But like as he said, that's a private transaction between two people or a company and a person, or whatever way it be, that they don't have any role in this. And like, it'll take a small bit of time to tease out what the market is going to be. I'm going to look into that for next week to see, is there any early signals around what the trade is likely to be. But at the moment, say the brokers or agents, they're touching base with some of the people that they know is going to be most affected or the most tricky ones to even get the conversation started on this.
Okay, so no, anyone that has any issues and wants to attend that Ballina meeting, that's absolutely no problem. And there's another CAP meeting, Darren, later in the month. Is it the end of the month? I think the 31st of January.
Yeah, 31st. We're going to Westmeath for that one, Jack. And hopefully, look, at that stage, we'll probably be closer on to having a final figure for what the ECO scheme is worth. The department's CAP calculator is on 77 euros per hectare at the moment. Given that everybody, or that you say there's 93% coming in for Space for Nature, and there's more than likely going to be a very high participation rate, that ECO scheme figure will probably go down. So as the next few weeks come on, we're going to see a lot more information coming on about what's happening.
Okay, lastly, Darren, we'll finish. I finish with Adam on a positive note. Lamb prices back a touch on a negative note.
Yeah, like very contrasting fortunes, Jack. Like you'd say at the moment that the beef trade is on the crest of a wave. Now, look, at every bit of that is needed given where finishing costs are. Unfortunately, lamb prices back 20 to 30 cents in the last week. And like some finishers have had a double whammy that haven't bought meal for a while and maybe facing meal prices 10 to 20 euros higher. Like I was doing a couple of figures, Jack, and if you were working out meal at 450 euros a ton, now we just take that for example. Some people are buying it at 500 euros, some people are buying it, luckily enough, where they bought into it at 410, 420. But if you were to take that, take a 200, say it's a daily feed cost over 50 cents a day. If you're to take good land performance, 250 grams, kill out of 45%, you're gaining about 70 cent a kilo carcass in value a day. So you haven't much to play around with. If your cost of concentrates is higher or your lamb performance is lower, well, then at the moment, you're barely or struggling to break even. And that has really, I suppose, maybe hit the confidence of finishers this week. Like you're talking prices somewhere in the region of 610 to 630 a kilo. Factories slow to quote too far in advance. What's being blamed for it is a surplus in New Zealand lamb on the market. That if we went back 3 years ago, the differential between Irish and New Zealand lamb, or you could say EU prices, New Zealand lamb was less than a euro a kilo. That's now widened out to 180 to 2 euros. A lot of that coming from, we've seen New Zealand benefiting from huge volumes being exported to China in recent years. The COVID-19 sanctions that were very stringent reduced that, and in turn, that has brought some lower priced New Zealand sheep meat now coming onto the market and is hitting markets and creating a lot of market volatility. The same thing happened to a lesser extent in 2022, in that there was a lull in demand in the middle of January, as we often see, or a hangover in the market, and that quickly passed by. The only hope that you'd have at the moment is that because China is back buying huge volumes and there's a serious appetite in China, as we've seen with the ending of COVID restrictions here, for people to get back out to normal, that will soak up a lot of this surplus New Zealand lamb, and hopefully there won't be much more destined to come onto the market here. When I talk about, say, New Zealand lamb coming, there's a lag phase because it's shipping containers. So you're looking at, say, 2-3 week period. So it takes a while to adjust to market, to what way markets are reacting.
Thanks, Darren. Chat to you again next week. Aidan, maybe to pick up where I left off with you in terms of the quick fire, there was a question in there on the organic nitrogen and the whole nitrates debate, I suppose, that's flaring up at the moment. Just maybe recap, that farmer questioned, was his herd going to be classified as 106 kilos of organic nitrogen, because a high-yielding herd, obviously, unless he submitted numbers to the Department of Agriculture. Is that facility open, Aidan, just now to submit your figures to the Department of Ag?
No, Jack, as far as I know, it hasn't. It's not open. I don't know who you'd send them to if you were to send them in. Now, you're not correct there in saying that he's obviously a high-yielding herd. because all herds who don't submit figures are going to be classified as 106, whether they're producing, you know, 100 litres per cow or 10,000 litres per cow per year. So that's an important distinction. And I mean, the department have only come out with that in the last number of days. So really the impetus then is on farmers to submit their figures. Now, I understand that the ICBF are working on formulating a template that farmers can download and print off and sign or give to their advisor to send in along with their nitrate or their nitrate surrogation application form, or send it separately. I'm not sure what the department are actually planning for there. So there's a bit of confusion there around that and what's going to happen. And there's even greater confusion then, Jack, in the wording on this statutory instrument document. So this is the one that these come out quite regularly. It's where the government are amending legislation. So they've amended the rules that they already signed in last July to state that farmers the band is based on the average of the last 3 years milk data or the year preceding the introduction of the regulations, which would be 2022. So I've asked the department for clarifications on that, whether what's going to happen. So that's fine for this year, 2023, but can you still use that in 2024, 25, and so on and so forth, even if your milk yield per cow exceeds, what it was in 2022, So there's a lot of uncertainty there. I presume there's going to be clarity coming soon on it. We have our nitrates information meetings coming up at the 24th in Cavan and the 26th in Portlaoise. So by then we'll definitely have clarification, and Ted Massey, the senior inspector in the department, is going to be present at those meetings too. So that'll be good to get clarity there. But okay. So this is where we're at. There's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, there seems to be plenty of questions, and someone WhatsApped a message to me as well, Ed, during the week, in terms of actual the cow numbers piece and trying to kind of calculate how many cows exactly how the department again were going to calculate how many cows were on the farm during the year, and is it only milking cows as in calved cows and what way? So is that still up in the air a little bit?
Slightly. So we know it's average cow numbers for the year, and a cow is anything that a dairy bred animal, so a Friesian or a dairy Shorthorn or Jersey, whatever else, anything that's classed as dairy breed. Adult cow on the farm and that has had a calf is a cow. So whether she's milking or dry, it's all the one, she's still a cow, and she's going to feed into your cow figures. So in actual fact, the more of those, the more cull cows you have, Jack, maybe the more advantageous it is. When I say cull cow, I mean a cow that's not milking, a dry dairy cow.
Yes.
Because it's actually diluting your figures per cow. But okay. The flip side of that is you have to carry that cow, and she's going to be carried at 92 or 106 or 80, depending on whatever band you're in. Yeah. So she's adding to your figure as well. So it depends on where you are,
And if you were some of those dairy farmers that get rid of their culls in September or October, and so they're not with you for the full year, like is that factored in? Will that?
Oh yeah. It's the average. It's whatever day, however many days they are on the farm, it's percentage of that then. So it's usually to do it on a month by month basis, but it's the average number of cows in that month. So it's very accurate now, in fairness to the ICBF and the AIMS database, it's very accurate. And it's different to what's on your co-op performance report. So many farmers would use the co-op performance report as the reference. So all farmers get this, whether you're a member of Herd Plus or not. But it's different figure to that. The way they calculate it in the crop performance report isn't the same as the way they calculate it for nitrates. So it's the nitrates is the better one to use on that. But there's also another thing in that statutory instrument document that they just published, and it's a confusing one as well, because they mentioned around an adult dairy bred animal. So technically, would a heifer qualify then? Calf heifer, let's say, and when she's 24 months of age, is she count as a cow? Even if she mightn't even be in calf, so there's a little bit more confusion there as well. And there's a few anomalies, but we're getting cleared up. And whenever the department are probably in wondering about the best way to manage it as well. So
okay, and as you say, those meetings are coming up towards the end of January in Cavan. And where was the second location? Did you say
Portlaoise? 26th in Portlaoise.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, there was plenty of questions about nitrates and all that piece in Thomond Park there during the week as well at the IFA meeting. So there's plenty of questions out there and plenty of farmers looking to know what's right or what's wrong. You were also Aidan at the Positive Farmers Conference down in Cork this week.
Yeah, and look, it was a good 2 days, Jack. Plenty of speakers as well, and a good bit of topic and a good bit of discussion on nitrates came up on that as well. And I was shown a few slides there on the impact, I suppose, in terms of nitrates on on the signpost dairy farmers. So these are there's 50 signpost dairy farmers in the Chagas signpost program, 120 farmers in that altogether, 50 of them are dairy farmers. And I got their stats and I was looking down through their stocking rates and their nitrate levels. So God forbid, if the nitrates was lost in Ireland, these farmers would need an extra 17 hectares of land each just to comply with the new rules, or else they'd have to reduce their cow numbers by 28. So the derogation is hugely important. Now, the reduction from 250 to 220 won't really have much of an impact on them because they're still below the threshold. Their overall stock rate is still relatively fair. But that was just
assuming they keep the same amount of land that they have now.
Absolutely, yeah. And a fair share of that would be on leased land and all the rest, which will have an impact there too. But there was a good session on water quality and managing it and biodiversity. Dara O'Hulachan, he works in Chagas, Jack. He's an expert in biodiversity and all that. He gave a good talk on the policy and the policy framework around EU and Irish legislation and its impacts on biodiversity. And then Shane Fitzgerald, a Waterford dairy farmer, gave a really good talk actually. Now it was very practical on what he does on managing water quality. So he went through his costs. So he's making 3,000 euros a hectare of profit, and his costs are still low, and he can still manage to have, you know, a highlight. He's 4 and 5 meter boundaries around some fields. His hedgerow boundaries moved out an awful lot. He's only cutting ditches every 2 years. The point he was making is he has, you know, good biodiversity and he also has good profit. So he can combine the two together. It's not one or the other, which some farmers often feel about. So it's look, it was good. It gave a bit of a, you know, I suppose, perspective on things, and it opened a few eyes in terms of what's possible in order to be profitable and good for the environment.
That 3,000 per hectare, did that include a kind of a wage for himself, or was his labor cost included in that?
His own labor cost. He didn't go into that much detail on it. It was National Farm Survey data, so I'd say his labor cost, his own labor cost, weren't included, but any hired labor would have been included.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Aidan, I seen the paper there. I leave you on this because I know you're under pressure. I seen the paper. You're is it judging? You are the Grassland Farmer of the Year competition. Is that happening now at the moment?
Unfortunately, it has been, Jack. Yeah, so we did most of it, in fairness, before Christmas. Look, we're going to change it next year, and it's a timing issue around getting the application forms in, and then we're trying to judge them on the year that it's on as well. So there's a couple of issues. Look, you can still assess grass quality and grass management even in the wintertime, but it's not ideal. It'd be nicer if you're out in farm. Nicer anyway, and I suppose better for the farmer to see the pre-grazing yields and the post-grazing, for us to see the post-grazing yields and the pre-grazing yields as well. But look, we're doing a good job. We're nearly there in terms of coming to a conclusion. The Minister for Ag is going to announce the winner in the next few weeks. I've 3 more profiles to do, 2 beef farmers and a dairy farmer left to profile in the paper. Look, they're all good farmers. Like, to get to this level, they have to be good. We're not just coming randomly to them. So, you know, there's a pre-screening done by Chagas in terms of pasture-based data, and they all have to be using clover. They need to be sustainable in terms of their use of inputs. So these are, to get there, they're good. And there's a good roundup on them in the paper, nice little snippets in each one, and you get something out of it. Good regional background this year as well, Jack. Farmers from all over the country, Galway, Mayo, Tipperary and Cork. So it's a good roundup.
Okay, excellent. Aidan, thanks for that. Chat to you next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.